Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the second weekly edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
No Collusion Val.
Yes.
Going to keep this one around just for a little while longer.
Hell yeah. And Beans, you know, I'm going to send you something in the mail, and I'm going to make your name Frankie No Collusion Val on the envelope.
That'd be great.
It's going to be all you. Hold on. I'm going to do my best Michael Savage for you all.
Ugh.
Yes, baby. You know,
you just had half our audience just turned off the podcast.
There will be no more slurping for the rest of the podcast.
Okay. He doesn't slurp. I mean, that would be just over the top. It's just other things. Like, you can tell when somebody is talking through a mouthful of food, and that is the most disrespectful thing I think a professional speaker can do to its audience.
When I was in college, I had a friend who used to be the messiest, most disgusting eater. And I couldn't even sit there with him at like the wherever we called it, the rat, and eat, because I just couldn't. I was just like, oh, I was horrified and scarred by this experience.
You ever see Kingpin?
No.
When Bill Murray is sitting down with Woody Harrelson in the beginning, when he's first starting to con him, and Woody Harrelson is just dumb as a box of rocks, and he's just sitting there with Bill Murray, and he's eating this bowl of cereal, and you can tell that Murray is getting increasingly more disgusted with him. Finally, he just says, "How about you go outside and finish that?" And he just leaves.
That's what I felt like saying every time I would sit with this friend of mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited about the next phase of all the upgrades at the studio, because now that everything I need for the computer is in, I'm going to give it to my friend to assemble it. That computer that I'm using as a broadcast machine right now at the studio, that's going to get reformatted, and I'll be able to bring that one home. So I hope that I will also be able to get myself a decent microphone so that I can start doing podcast, on the go stuff like this from home and maintain that high quality of audio. So I apologize to people at home who hear the drop off, but I'm doing this from home over a webcam right now.
That's fine, because that'll be great too. Just some like business on the air, I guess, because there are so many times lately, Frank, where I'm like, oh, I wish I could just get together with Frank for 45 minutes and just shoot.
We can do, honestly, when I have a home set up over here, if something goes on in the middle of the day and let's put out a 15 minute dissection on any one thing, we can do little tiny episodes.
Yeah, I'm really excited, because like I feel like everything's kicked into gear. Now it's time for the next phase. And just so everybody knows, something that I'm doing here at home, I had plans. Me and my dad sat down and we schemed out. My dad is a ridiculously talented man in many different ways. And so we sat down together and kind of brainstormed a studio room for my, right now I'm in a very like a large kind of family room type area. And there's enough room in this area for me to like kind of block out a studio sort of an area, which I've been planning on doing for a really long time and just haven't had the chance to do. So I am going to personally be building this new studio with my blood, sweat, and tears as soon as I get the okay from the doctor that I can begin to physically exert myself again.
Love it.
Yeah, I'm going to soundproof the walls. I'm going to have like a little section with like a couch and stuff in case I want to do like, you know, interviews or sit down videos or whatever. I am so excited about it. It is going to take things to the next level for you guys for sure. And I have like my green screen set up now so that like if I wanted to produce my own little news show, I would be able to do it. Now, that doesn't mean I have the skills to do it. It just means that I have an idea in my head about it.
But, you know, it doesn't matter. I'll tell you, it doesn't matter if you don't have the skills, because number one, Tracy, everybody, including myself, because, you know, not only I produce content for a living as well, but I consume massive amounts of content. We all do. And we're all learning that, hey, well, let's go out and let's find content we trust, and let's find entertainment we trust. We can see what is tainted, what's got an agenda working for it. And the one thing that everybody is starting to cling to here, and it is the authenticity factor.
Yeah.
And I think the lipstick and blush production of network television and what we have grown up looking at and as thinking and considering as being most legitimate, it's the stuff that we are actually fighting against most these days. So it's
I just want to be able to point upward and like put a headline on the screen. I want people to see me more. They hear my voice all the time, but they can't like look into my eyes when I'm talking to them. And if I'm going to have people see me more, I still have to be able to do the things that I need to do in terms of documentation on the screen. And it doesn't hurt for it to have an air of professionalism to it. Like, your show is so professional looking, you know, that's what I'm striving towards you in terms of visuals.
Well, OBS is a good place to start, or VidBlaster. I'll talk to you off air though.
Yeah. I've just started tinkering with OBS. I did a Periscope with it the other day. It was fun.
Yeah, a lot of options there when you have more to do than just talk or whatever the hell it is. So it'll be a lot of fun. And like I said, I love the whole idea. You know, when I was watching Daredevil, and when you watch any kind of Superman traditional vigilante kind of comic book, or you're reading something along those lines, I always loved, I think the coziest parts about all of that is there's obviously a person who is being driven by some reason to make society better, and they can't wait anymore. You have the whole vigilante aspect of it, but they always have somebody who's willing to do the gritty reporting. And I always felt it was so cozy, that newsroom feel, that staying at a newspaper office late at night, lit by dim light, and
yep,
you're putting together a really cutting article that the whole city's going to read the next day, and you're on the cutting edge of something. To think that feeling can be brought into our own home workspaces, and we can actually create that and cause ripples, is so cozy. And I'm so happy that we're alive at this point in time.
I agree with you. I was talking to somebody yesterday. We were going over some of this stuff, and this person is a very good friend of mine who I respect very much, and said that they anticipate the entire news organization or establishment to be completely gone in 2 years, and for things to be combined. And I agree. I think that we're on the precipice of it happening now. And the more these people dig themselves the holes they're digging themselves into, which, I mean, I can't believe the double down on stupid lately.
Yeah.
It's like, keep going, people. Keep it going. Please. Keep going. I want them to keep doing this. You?
I do. Oh, I do. Because, first of all, you're talking about doubling down. Adam Schiff is that guy is a weird, that's like a turtle out of his shell. I can't
Pencil
stand
neck.
Yeah, no, he's a real weird turtle out of his shell. And to see him just so compulsively stick to this, man, oh, man.
He was freaking out yesterday. He was really unnerved. I've never seen Adam Schiff run away from reporters before. And he was running away from reporters yesterday. Honestly, if there is a FISA on anybody right now in the administration, like in, not in the administration, but out, you know, in this whole takedown, if there's a reverse FISA, you know, garnered by real intelligence with real reasons, he's not two hops away from it. That's for sure. So I don't know what his end game is with him and Swalwell and Nadler, and why they think meeting with Brennan yesterday, they all met like in this little, you know, in this little back room. And I did an analysis of Donald Trump's interview with Sean Hannity. Did you hear that by chance?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
The whole 40 minutes I listened to it.
Oh, goodness. I did a whole analysis on it, and I haven't uploaded it yet. And basically, like, one of the things that I said was, you know, he mentions Brennan and how Brennan said he got bad intelligence, and he mentions all of the people involved, and he basically throws shade at everybody. And he knew so much. Not that I didn't think he knew it. He's the president, and this is obviously of major concern to him. But to hear him articulate the minutia of the story that we focus on was so awesome. Like talking about McAuliffe and talking about how McCabe was involved. And I mean, it was just like, and anybody who doubts at this point that there will be accountability for this stuff, stop listening to anybody who tells you that they're not going after these people, please. Anybody who's giving you the fear porn, no one's ever going to jail, no one's ever going to get in trouble, walk away quickly.
Yeah. No, and last night, you know, when I was watching Adam Schiff respond to the House Intelligence Committee Republicans asking him to resign, I was watching his response, and he keeps going back to that Trump Tower meeting that I'm telling you, it's beyond me to listen to it, because and that's why I said it's beyond a shadow of a doubt that things are happening, and the things that we were hoping we'd be working toward are happening. Now, it's just how amazing is the next phase going to be is the only question. I hope that that action is taken in a very swift and convincing way.
Yeah.
I don't want it to drag out. I want the hammer to come down hard, and I just want penalties to be doled out ruthlessly. But when I was watching this, I'm saying to myself, this guy is doing exact. First of all, you had Don Jr., who makes the ambitious mistake of taking this meeting at Trump Tower. And even though there was nothing criminal about this meeting, nothing was exchanged. In fact, the only reason why the meeting was taken is because they threw out the bait of dirt on a political opponent. When you get there was no dirt, and there was only Magnitsky Act, which he did not bite on anyway. So there's really nothing going on there. The other part of this is, remember, Veselnitskaya, Fusion GPS, and Hillary Clinton are actually behind this meeting.
Yeah.
So you have the baiting, the entrapment scheme that fails with Don Jr., which he should not have taken the meeting just because the optics were bad enough for the FBI and for Fusion GPS to use it against him.
Yeah, but did he know that at the time?
How could he know it?
Right. So, I mean,
you know, But are you talking about Schiff or are you talking about Don Jr.?
I'm talking about Don Jr. I mean, at the time, this meeting came to him through people he thought were friends, and he thought he was going to get something good to nibble on in the campaign. I mean,
absolutely. Exactly. I know. I'm saying it was an ambitious mistake with hindsight being 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, there was only one side of this equation that took this act of ambition, and on the other side, this entrapment scheme, and they formulated it in a way and used it to then abuse federal power. And then now you have Schiff using this situation in the exact way it was intended on being used, as he's chairing a committee that was only set up to prolong said federal abuse.
There are so many things in there that I want to prompt you to talk more on with me. Like, for example, how many, I don't even want to call them stroke. I mean, it was almost like divine providence was over the Trump campaign. Like, obviously they're very good people who are law and order people. How many times do you think they said no to something that if they would have, like, let's just say for argument's sake, somehow Stefan Halper got inside the campaign, this would be an entirely different story. If he were able to get inside the campaign somehow, like they wanted to, or Mifsud somehow, some one of these people that we haven't even heard of yet was able to ingrain themselves into the campaign, like Felix Sater did, for example, and start sending emails about working with Putin and actually meeting with shady Russians as a ruse to, you know, justify what they were doing. Can you imagine? They must have hit this campaign every which way from Sunday trying to get somebody in there. And, you know, the establishment played along by restricting access to any legitimate real people that would want to work with him on his campaign. What divine providence that they never took any of those people on.
It's pretty much like for Donald Trump to be standing where he is right now, he has successfully swam through shark infested waters without getting eaten. It's almost as if he swam from New York to Cuba without being eaten by just like, you know, swarms of tiger shark and hammerheads. It's amazing what was being thrown at this campaign. What was not only just being obviously not even being thrown at him directly. They wanted to get into the campaign. Carter Page is a perfect example. Here's a guy who really is a man of zero consequence, someone who the FBI knew is not a Russian because they were working with him mere months before this scam was even put in place. And they went for this useless dolt, Carter Page, so that they can, you know, start picking off people around him. They were just trying to get something on the inside. And the fact that, like you said, it might be modern day divine providence that they were not able to penetrate in an effective way, that they had to settle for still at this point hearsay. And that's exactly what's going on. They're settling for hearsay and circumstantial evidence. Because there's nothing that you can't say that anything was exchanged at the meeting. Even when they got inside Trump Tower, they left empty handed. So all they can do is just build up a cloud of suspicion around Don Jr. and whoever was in that room that day. It's really remarkable how Trump was able to skate through this without being destroyed.
Yeah, and you know, in addition to all of that, Devin Nunes was on Maria Bartiromo yesterday, and he did about a 6.5 minute interview, which I covered in this video I haven't uploaded yet. And inside of the interview, he gives us another little tidbit of information that we haven't gotten yet. He says that the DOJ was paying people already inside the Trump campaign for information.
Well,
who are those people? I want to know who they are.
Oh,
I mean, yeah. Talk about crazy. This is like Rush Limbaugh was on Sean Hannity yesterday, and he was also on Neil Cavuto. And I've just been listening to every legacy media source I can get my hands on over the past week just to hear the public sort of, you know, the public presentation of all this stuff and how it's going to go down. And so I'm listening to Rush yesterday, and he says, I don't think that the American people have really had time to swallow and digest what actually has happened here, because it is so brazen and treasonous and an attack against our country that I don't think most Americans really get it. And he's right. I don't think they get it either. I've seen like a bunch of people, oh, it's time to move on. No, they're trying to, like, the never Trump or, you know, establishment hack type people are trying to, like, pepper in there, you know, enough is enough already with these investigations. We've just got to go on and move on. And no.
I think you're right on that. I mean, it's one of the it's the thing that I was waiting for us to get to this point, because when I heard Nancy Pelosi say, well, he's just not worth it. He's just not worth it. I knew that they were actually going to use these exact lines, that when the time came, that let's say in some way that they were actually able to get Trump to leave office early, or he loses in 2020, which I do not believe is going to happen. At that point, as long as Trump is out of the way, they were never going to pursue this any further.
Nope.
It was always going to be, well, listen, you know what, we've already had enough heartbreak for the country. Let's just move on and try to pick up the pieces. That this was always going to be the play, because the only objective was ever to get this man out of their way. And I think that more so than ever, people got to really realize, and I know that most of the people who listen to this show already do, but for the rest of the country, who actually understands and been following along, they got to realize this is not a matter of how they're painting it. It's not a picture of Democrats and, you know, never Trumper neocons we're looking at this from a perspective of, oh, wow, all of these pieces and all of the circumstances that have built up around Donald Trump during the campaign and then afterwards, and then the DNC leaks and all these weird connections around WikiLeaks and blah, 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 and Roger Stone and Paul Manafort and all these. Well, listen, I mean, look at how many people, look at how many things that were automatically cast out onto the chessboard here. How could you not look into that? But now that we know, he's in the clear. Let's move on and let's talk about something substantive. Well, no, that's not what's going on here. It's not a matter of everybody doing their patriotic duty. We are looking at something that was concocted from the beginning to subvert an American election. And not only that, they subverted the 2018 election. This entire thing was meant to carry them through the midterms. It has definitely impacted the way that the president has been able to operate globally, with the way that he negotiates with other countries. They've used this that they have concocted from the beginning to throw a wet blanket over this man. And actually, the initial thing was to definitely try to prevent him from even attaining office. So this is not about, okay, well, there was no collusion, let's move on. It's like, no. We were talking about collusion because you laid these traps in front of the entire country and you made their brains into scrambled eggs. People need to – I don't even want to say what I want to say.
What do you want to say? I want to know what it is.
Listen, like I said last night, if this were ancient Rome, half of D.C. would have been crucified along I-95 already.
Yeah, it's – there's a reason why the penalty for treason is what it is. There's a reason for that.
You know what? Let me put one more thing on top of that. It's not a matter of domestic political forces who wanted to pull out all the stops and prevent someone from getting into office and ruining their parade. It's not a matter of that. The bigger story is we are looking at a scheme that was perpetrated by an international power structure that did not want the gravy train to end. This is not even about Americans who were trying to subvert an American election. This was an international play to keep the United States where international bodies of people and bankers and regulators wanted our country to be in. This is an international scheme.
Including all the Five Eyes countries, Britain. You know, I wonder if we're seeing all these issues overseas right now because of this mess. And, you know, remember the first politician to come and congratulate Trump after he was elected? Who was it? Who came from the UK?
Oh, who was it? Hannigan?
No.
I keep forgetting.
It was May.
Oh, that's right. That's right. She came over. She had a cold, right?
Yes, she did. Very ill. She had pneumonia.
But she couldn't put it off.
Nope.
So what do you suspect that was about then?
Please, 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 God, we're so sorry. We didn't mean for this to happen. That's what I think that was about.
Wow.
And
so that that would give a little bit more meaning as to why when Donald Trump sat down with Angela Merkel for the first time, he wouldn't shake her hand?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, there was. I mean, if you go back, like I was talking about this in my video, too, you know, Sean Hannity asked President Trump. He said, you know, we were a little surprised after the election. You said, you know, let's let sleeping dogs lie. Let's just kind of let this all go. Let's move forward. No need to focus on the past. And everyone was like, oh, my God, he's giving Hillary Clinton a freaking pass. What the hell is going on here? No one's going to jail. Everybody's going to get away with it, blah, blah, blah. And the first thing he said when he took the podium after he won the presidency was, sorry to keep you waiting. Complicated business.
I love that line.
That was the first thing he said. So everybody, including me, was starting to speculate like, OK, he made a deal. You guys step aside. Let me do my thing. Don't bother me. And everything will be good, because he would never have said because you'd be in jail if he didn't mean it. He has wanted to go after this woman and her ilk forever. So now he says yesterday, you know, I don't feel that way anymore. You cannot get more clear of a telegraph from this. You can't.
And I think he knows that. I think maybe he probably knew that what was lying ahead, and the road that was lying ahead for him to take the revenge and retribution stance right off the bat would not have been good for the fight he was about to embark on.
I you're right. I think that could definitely be true, and I also think that there are two little like compartments right now of people. There are the swamp creatures that are going to collaborate. And, you know, again, in his speech, he said a couple times in his interview, they meet in a back room and they laugh. How does he know? That's not a lie. He means that. How does he know where they're meeting, what they're laughing about? There has been a fundamental shift
Fundamental shift.
There's been a fundamental shift in what's going on in Washington right now. And I think it all began at the 2-year mark when he started doing all of the things he was doing in terms of laying people off and bringing new people in and everything that he was doing internally that they oh, it's chaos. It's chaos. And not to jump around too much, but I started thinking this morning, very early this morning, and for the past couple of days, it's been tinkering around in my brain. In April, in February, in March of last year, we had the memo, the Nunes memo came out. It was all about the FISA warrant and how it informed the dossier, informed the FISA warrant. Nunes has been on this like white on rice. And he released his memo and they wanted to keep it quiet. They said anyone saying release the memo was a Russian bot. It's the reason why I had my Operation Justice March in the first place. It just infuriated me to no end. And then Nunes was like, Schiff was like, if you're going to put a memo out, then so are we, because your memo is bunk. So the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence was obviously being run by the Republicans. They weren't going to let this Democrat memo out. And then at the last minute, they said, you know what? Let's let the memo out. How about it? So Schiff puts out this memo. It's 10 pages long. And basically, every single thing inside this memo is a lie, a flat out lie, like Frank, a lie, blatant lie.
That's why it always comes back around to for it with me is they knew they only had a really shitty hand to play and they just had to play it. They have to do what they want and pray for the best. Just pray for the best, because what else could Schiff have done at that point?
I mean, it's stunning, though. Like, I'm not just saying like, oh, you know, he massaged the truth here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to start this today. It's going to take me a while. It's 10 pages. But I'm going to take mainstream media reporting and put it up next to Schiff's memo. And well, look, contemporaneous evidence of Russia's election interference, concerning Russian links and outreach to Trump campaign officials, Page's history with Russian intelligence. The FBI never paid Christopher Steele for the dossier or for any. I mean, the whole entire thing is a lie. I'm yelling into my microphone right now. I see the button is like turning red because I'm screaming into it.
Red line, Tracy.
Red line. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it. Poor guys are going to have a lot of producing to do on this one.
Hey, maybe that'll be the name of my network, the Red Line Network.
The Red Line Network. Huh.
Or Red Eye. Maybe it's the Red Eye Network because it'll be like a marijuana reference.
You know, there has been in my neighborhood just in the past week or so, two CBD shops that have taken up right in my area, like right around the corner. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting. There's a big billboard on a road near my house. CBD. I'm like, what the hell is happening?
Load up.
But I was going to say, like, we're moving along in this kind of evolution. Like, we talk a lot, but we have some of the same ideas about where we want to take our work and how we want to expand upon it. And we at first started talking about all this, what, almost 2 years ago now together?
Yeah.
It's almost 2 years, which is absolutely crazy.
I know, it's crazy.
Thank you for being one of the only people still standing after 2 years.
I'm one of those guys. I'm fiercely loyal. You know, sometimes I'm loyal to a fault, though. I mean, for example, I should have gotten rid of my dermatologist a long time ago, but I don't know. I'm just loyal.
No, but I don't mean that like you're still I don't mean it the way you're taking it. I just mean that there are so few people with any integrity in this little space at all.
And well, that too.
Yeah. But it's been nice to settle in with one. So
well, I've been having a great time. So here's cheers to 2 more years.
Cheers to 2 more years. That rhyme. We're poets and we didn't even know it.
Exactly.
So I'm going to go through this Nunes memo and the Schiff memo. Put them up next to one another and see the test of time, which has fared better. And then there's more. Trump Russia 2.0. Dossier tied firm pitching journalists daily on collusion. collusion.
Oh, geez.
Now, does Adam Schiff meeting with Glenn Simpson, the other, you know, the meeting that, what's his name, John Solomon reported, make any sense now?
Oh, yeah, it makes a lot more sense.
So basically, there's a Dossier 2.0 crowd run by Dan Jones. Dan Jones, Feinstein's former person.
Oh, that's right. I was wondering where the hell he was from. What, I forget.
Yeah. They send out these news briefs from the Democracy Integrity Project.
Well, thank God somebody out there is trying to protect the integrity of our democracy.
I hate that. I hate that. Can you people please? We don't have a democracy.
Exactly.
It is so ridiculously uninformed.
Well, think about it. It's all word magic there, too. If you say that we're protecting something that does not exist, so we're protecting the American democracy, which does not exist, then every step they take toward doing things like expanding the courts and destroying the Electoral College and trying to petition for statehood for Washington, D.C. or for Puerto Rico to create more Senate seats for themselves, those would be effective actions taken to protect American democracy, which is mob rule. That's it. So it really, they're always telling you the truth with their deceptions. And it's pretty much the way that the occult works, because they have to stay within some kind of a karmic balance. If they just, it's flat out deception, then.
Well, that's why Schiff's going down.
That's why a lot of people are going down, because they have not balanced out their deceptions at all.
It's true. And what he's saying is absolutely true, listeners out there. It's 100% true. And whether or not it's actually true in practice, like. In other words, if you believe the metaphysical part of it, then that's great. But even if you don't believe the metaphysical part of it, they do.
Yep.
They do. And this, the democracy needs to be protected, everyone. This article that is written by Paul Sperry, who does really good work. But do you ever notice with him, I don't know if you catch him on Twitter, everything is breaking. 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 Easter is in 4 weeks. Breaking. Easter.
Breaking.
I love Paul Sperry, but like he breaks news that broke 2 years ago, and
lots of broken news out there.
Breaking. So basically, who's been looking at? I'm going to name a name that you may not have heard me say in a long time, but Michael Caputo. Michael Caputo has been calling out Dan Jones for a really long time. I listened to an episode of his podcast that airs every once in a blue. There's a lot of interesting tidbits in there. And he was saying that when he went to meet in front of Congress, he called this very TDIP newsletter out and said, hey, you know, you bring him in here and start asking him questions about this stuff, because none of this stuff is true. And they're still doubling down on it. And not only that, but they've partnered up with New Knowledge. This is the firm, Frank, that was funded by LinkedIn co-founder Reid Hoffman, the one who colluded to change the outcome of an election in Alabama.
Yeah, yeah. With all the same methods that they're accusing Russians of using to actually not succeed in changing the election results for the general election. Yeah. So they accuse Russia of meddling in America's 2016 general election. Not one vote is changed. And the method that they say the Russians used ineffectively were used effectively by them in Alabama.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Oh, totally.
And the crazy thing is, and I talked about this too, when we were starting to get dribs and drabs of the memo, summary document coming out. Donald Trump said yesterday, not one single vote was changed by any of this. Not one. He also stated in his Sean Hannity interview that they are doing paper backups on all these ballots.
My whole thing is, what the hell are they going to do? What is going to be done on a state? Well, what's going to be done on a state level to combat the ballot harvesting?
I don't know what. They're, you know, he didn't elaborate other than to say they'll have a paper backup, which I don't know how they're rolling that out. We haven't heard anything about it in the news. There's 2 years to do it. Not even.
I just hope that people like Omar Navarro and anybody out there who is campaigning for House seats in California, where they are in such an extreme minority politically that they're never going to be able to have any kind of measures passed to put a damper on the ballot harvesting thing. I just hope that they put their own efforts on the ground to make sure that they're at least going out and making sure that everybody who used to vote in those more conservative districts in California aren't not having their vote erased by these little gremlins running around on the streets.
I don't think that there's as much of a minority there as you think there is. The initial results from California, there was a side-by-side map of California. Like, most of that map was turning red.
Well, they still lost Orange County.
They stole those seats back.
That's what I'm saying.
I know.
There needs to be some kind of countermeasure in 2020 if you want to get those seats back on. And that's another thing. If those seats come back onto the Republican side of things, I really can't stand talking Democrat Republican. I really can't. Every time I hear myself talking about it, I'm like, you sound like a Republican, Frank.
Well, we don't have a choice right now. The battle's more important than the semantics of all the stuff. And people know how you feel. You know, people know.
But it'll be really interesting in 2020 if any of those seats come back into the red, because then you're going to wonder, what the hell happened in 2018? What was this little hiccup when Democrats had zero momentum, but they had a whole lot of ground game? I don't know.
Yeah. And people say, oh, it was healthcare that got them the strong showing. And I'm like, bullshit. Bullshit. Where do these people get this stuff from? That's one thing listening to these channels that I've been listening to, because I really feel like I have a responsibility to understand exactly what the playing field looks like and like what sort of narratives are being played out. So listening to this, I'm like, some of these people, like, who are you talking? Like, where do you get these ideas from? It's like throwing anything against the wall to see what sticks up there. And I just.
So, I know.
Who's calling me? I don't know that phone number. Anyway, so there's that. What else is there? Oh, Max Boot. He says, how on earth was Barr able to digest and summarize a 300 plus page report in less than 48 hours? What's your comeback, Frank? Go.
300 pages in 2 days. I mean, any kind of a efficient reader can read 300 pages in 2 days if that is their job. And not only that, but Barr, he has staff. He can even – there's so many ways you can do – it's another thing to say we have a 2,000-page spending bill that needs to be looked over for inconsistencies or inefficiencies or redundancies within a 36-hour period. I just don't even know what point you're trying to make. 300 pages?
I said – how on earth did the FBI digest and check for classification the thousands of Clinton emails found on Wiener's laptop?
Oh, hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands. 700,000 in 2 days.
I remember the excuse. Jim Comey said that they had special software.
Wizardry.
Again, special. But there's another deception right there. With the Wiener laptop, they had found hundreds of thousands of emails, and their software, their wizard software, detected that most of it was duplicates. And you're saying to yourself, okay, well, this is a guy, James Comey, who came out on July 5th, 2016, to let us know that the initial batch of emails that they thumbed through had countless emails exchanged that were marked classified, that were top secret, special access programs. We're talking about things where even one piece were accessed improperly by any one of us, we'd be in jail for another 15 years. And the fact that he would say, oh, don't worry, there was nothing to see here with Wiener's laptop. It's only everything we found elsewhere. Like, wait? So you're telling me you found all the same classified material again on a laptop that was being used by a child sex predator? Yeah. Okay, nothing to see here. I get it.
Yeah, and Luke Rosiak, given that you mentioned China, he comes out today and he says there's a lawsuit seeking documents potentially showing that the FBI ignored intelligence community IG evidence that Chinese hacked Clinton's server. Listen to me. The Chinese didn't hack Clinton's server. She left her door open and a glass of lemonade out on the table. Okay? She said, come on. Stelter would be like, do Stelter.
What would he do? I don't know.
I mean, Stelter would be like, these insinuations. I can't do it.
Can't a person leave their back door open anymore?
I love what you
Can't a person leave a back door anymore without a Chinese person coming in and stealing everything?
We have to be open to everybody.
Yeah, well, come on. I mean, let's get back to the old days where we can leave our digital back doors open and not have a bad actor, a foreign actor, come in and try to steal things.
As the days go on, how much more kind of relevant does that story we talked about on your show Wednesday night become?
Huge. Hugely relevant.
I can't even believe it.
Hugely relevant.
That tip was one of the best I've gotten in a long time.
But this week's broadcasts were really good. We had a good day of work on Wednesday with the first Dark to Light, and then you came on Wednesday night, and that was people really enjoyed that episode.
Thanks.
And there's a lot of there's a lot of good stuff. And you know what it is with the good work? It's the conversations just come easily. You don't need to bend over backwards to make your points because the pieces fit. Easily they fit. And now you're seeing everybody stutter their way and stammer their way through why they thought the way they did and why they still have a it's almost like watching Vox or something like that talk about why, you know, into the late phases of 2016, how Bernie Sanders still has a chance to win. You know, it's like, oh, God, let it go. You sound like an idiot.
Not only that, but like, you know who else sounds like an idiot? The media, because I just pulled up a CNN freaking politics article from February when Devin Nunes was doing his stuff. And the title is "Read the Disputed Memo Here." And then, like, I pulled up the other day, like, all of the articles.
Sorry.
Could you sneeze?
I just sneezed. First time on a show.
God bless you.
Thanks.
I wanted to tell a funny story, too, that was in my head, by the way. That's personal, but it's funny. So what was I saying? Oh, my
God.
I just saw this headline flash. Teen dies of tapeworm egg infestation in brain.
Oh,
God.
There's so many ways to die.
Oh,
it's just horrifying. It makes me not want to leave the house. It makes me not want to eat anything. I just want to get intravenous nutrition all day and not leave the house.
An 18-year-old who complained of seizures in the emergency room turned out to have parasites in his brain. Ugh. Oh, my gosh. I don't know why I'm even reading this. God help me. That's why I will never let my kids swim in a lake.
Oh, that's what happened?
No, I don't know why he got this tapeworm infestation in his brain, but I will not let my kids swim in a lake because of that brain-eating amoeba that lives in lakes. The chances of it being like ingested are like slim to zero, but my children will never, ever step their foot in a lake. Never.
You're going to give them a lake complex.
Good. If I can protect them from lakes, I sure as hell will.
You just tell them that there's a plesiosaur that lives underneath the water.
I'll show them the Mike Lee placard.
Yeah. Do you want to be eaten by this?
This is Ronald Reagan on the creature that could consume you. Oh, no, this is Aquaman on the creature that could consume you. Stay away from the lake. So here's the night of the show on Wednesday, Frank. I was at my son's practice for baseball because baseball's starting up again, as you know, right?
Yep.
So I was going to get us some quick eats. Well, not me, but they wanted Arby's for dinner. It's just like a rare occurrence. So I'm like, okay, fine. So there's an Arby's and then there's a bunch of other restaurants and there's a Chick-fil-A and there's all kinds of restaurants like right in the same little cluster. So I'm like, holy moly, it is 7 o'clock and Arby's is packed. There are like 20 cars online in the drive-thru. I'm like, I'm just going to park and go in. I park, I go inside, I'm online for like 15 minutes. I get up to the counter, I start ordering, and I get to the half pound roast beef. And the guy's like, you mean to me next door? I was in Chick-fil-A by accident.
See?
It was so embarrassing.
And they probably felt really, it was probably embarrassing for you, and they are probably just really sad that you just didn't want any of, you didn't want anything that they had.
You know, they have great food there, and Chick-fil-A is in the news because they're being banned from airports for being so, quote, hateful, because they're supporting causes that they agree with. God forbid. You know, the leftist companies that support all of these weird causes that we don't agree with are inclusive and loving and caring. But if, gosh darn it, a Christian company doesn't want to support, you know, whatever, hate mongers.
Well, the best thing about that is this is coming at a time. Well, yeah, I mean, you're bringing this up in a different fashion, but Chick-fil-A has never. You know, all they have their the owners' families. They have their own religious beliefs, and they have actually defended their stances and defended their positions in very, very civil ways. And they have not expressed hatred toward anybody. They just have their own beliefs, and they created a franchise and a food business that people really enjoy. And on the other hand, they're not looking to do anything really to negatively impact people aside from just being true to their own faith. And then on the flip side, you have all these well-paid zombie Hollywood actors who are trying to boycott and get people to starve out the Georgia economy because they're trying to pass a law that might restrict the ease at which human life can be extinguished.
Yeah.
Because it's just to see where they put all of their powers to twist the arms of Americans, and they go after people who just very quietly want to live their lives the way that they're comfortable living it. And what they twist people's arms over is so diabolical. On the other hand, it creates this, it creates just a sickening scenario that you can't even balance it out. It's so out of balance.
It's hatred on one side, and it's like these guys are afraid, like, that the hate will permeate into the food.
Right.
It's just a lust for power, like you always talk about, over everything. Like, there was a guy on Tucker the other night talking about climate change, and Tucker said, is there any way that you can implement any of these policies without taking over more control of everybody's life? And then there was like basically a chuckle. We need the government to implement. We need the government. We need the government. We need the government. No. People in Texas are saying, like, I don't need you to take away my ability to go to a restaurant just because you don't agree with it. I have the power to choose whether or not to go to the restaurant on my own without needing you. I don't need you. I'm having a hard time with you today, Frank.
Why?
Because something's different, and I don't know if you're bored or you're just not answering me or you don't know when to talk or if the sound is just weird.
No, everything sounds great over here.
Okay.
I feel great.
All right, good.
Jeez. You said, and I'm home too. I thought that it was, this was supposed to be the relaxing.
Oh, it is. I'm afraid I'm talking too much. I don't feel like I'm talking. I don't.
No. I prefer when you talk a lot because you know. Remember, that was my fear from the beginning. I didn't want to talk too much over you. So
I think it's pretty even at this point.
All right, good. So that's why I just shut up and I let you empty the tank, and then we go from there.
I know. I don't get to empty the tank on my – that's why I'm changing everything. Like, maybe
– the live stream you had the other day was great, and you got to do more chill out live streams where, you know, you interact with the chat room a little bit more, and that was really fun.
Thank you. I was glad that you were in there too. I sent some more people your way.
Well, I got the notification while I was there working on that night's show. I said, "Oh, well, let me pop in on here." So that was good. And actually, that was how we scheduled the second the second broadcast for this week.
Yeah,
it was just so on the fly. Like, hey, well, you know what? Let's do it Wednesday. And good, right there.
It was so great. It was so great. I really can't wait till we start doing that every week. Okay. Honestly.
See how people take to it this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mexico is doing nothing to help stop the flow of illegal immigrants to our country. They're all talk and no action. Likewise, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador have taken our money for years and do nothing. The Dems don't care. Such bad laws may close the southern border. 28,863 retweets, 116,846 likes.
What was it? What's the number up to right now? Crossings or at least encounters at the southern border for the month of March. I saw it top 100,000.
I don't know.
And to think, and this is what I'm talking about. You say there's no crisis at the border and the caravans are manufactured nonsense. Caravans, they're talking about 15,000, 20,000 people at a time. That is something that, you know, you can market, you can give a hashtag to, but it does not come close to talking about the daily flow. And yes, none of these countries are doing anything to stop it, even though on the surface they're like, oh no, guys, stop, don't do it. But what, I mean, it's, they're bleeding the radiator. They're all socialist hellholes with murder rates that are above and beyond anything else. Their economies are in shambles. They've got cultural issues, and when I say cultural issues, I'm talking socialism. I'm talking about the relationship between individuals and their government. They got a lot of things that are going wrong right now. And when you see this flow of hundreds of thousands of people that would otherwise, if they stayed home, would have to be taken care of by failing domestic governments, of course you're going to let them go. Of course you want them to leave. What are you going to say? Oh, don't leave? It's like they're bleeding a radiator. So it's I said this before. Not only do we just need to shut down the border to get this all worked out. I would love to take all of our troops. I want the 30,000 troops that we have in Germany right now to come
over here.
Yeah, why the hell are they over there kicking rocks in Germany? Get to the southern border. Not only, we just need to close the southern border down for at least 7 years altogether.
You know, it's crazy that you say that, because literally 11 minutes ago, the president tweeted that if let me just read it. The Democrats have given us the weakest immigration laws anywhere in the world. Mexico has the strongest, and they make more than $100 billion a year on the U.S. Therefore, Congress must change our weak immigration laws now, and Mexico must stop illegals from entering the U.S. through their country and our southern border. Mexico has for many years made a fortune off of the U.S., far greater than border costs. If Mexico doesn't immediately stop all illegal immigration coming into the United States through our southern border, I will be closing the border or large sections of the border next week.
Perfect.
Yeah, this would be so easy for Mexico to do, but they just take our money and, quote, talk. Besides, we lose so much money with them, especially when you add in drug trafficking, etc., that the border closing would be a good thing.
Yes. Yes, it would.
I think everybody, for the most part, agrees. How could he? I was watching a channel the other day. There was this interview with this woman from a college, and I couldn't believe what I was listening to. The complete inability to form a coherent thought, but plenty of horrible opinions on immigration and how Donald Trump is a racist, horrible person for trying to stop people from coming into the country. And my parents were legal immigrants, but that doesn't mean that illegal immigration shouldn't be something that I'm like, are you serious? Your parents busted their ass to get into this country.
My parents were legal immigrants, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't tolerate and love line hoppers.
Exactly.
People who jump in line and they're part of the 92% of people who willingly and willfully and avoid local or U.S. authorities to be able to sneak in and then squat somewhere for 15 years, have a couple of children, anchor themselves down here and then demand voting rights because I'm living in the shadows and I don't want to be in the shadows anymore. This is the most screwed up stuff. I'm trying not to curse.
No, that's fine.
It's so screwed up, and it's inherently racist, because what you're saying is essentially these people are being kept out because they're brown, and they're being kept out because what does that say about them, that they don't know how to respect a country's most fundamental laws for entry?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just this whole immigration thing is just so over the top. Like, I can't even believe that we're having to have this conversation. I really.
Yeah.
I don't understand how they've been able to brainwash the people. Well, no. See, I'm still of the same mindset that they are amplifying this ridiculously.
Yeah, it's projection. It's projection, 100%.
Yeah. And I cannot wait, Frank, for the general, when whoever this nominee ends up being needs to come up against Donald Trump, then trying to backtrack on all of the crazy extremist ideology they've preached for the past 18 months. I can't wait.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun, but we got to swing a big battle axe this year before 2020. That's for sure.
Even Joe Biden is apologizing for being a white male. And you know what's funny? He's talking about Anita Hill and how Anita Hill had to sit in front of the, you know, the Senate or whatever and, you know, be questioned by all these white men. Are they forgetting that Clarence Thomas was black?
And he still hasn't gotten into the African-American Museum. He still hasn't been admitted there because he's the wrong type of black guy. So, but listen, it goes right hand in hand with what we were talking about on Wednesday with the walkaway movement, the march being kicked out of the LGBT center in New York. They're the wrong type of gay people. They're not real gay people because they don't walk in lockstep with this crazy communist, I don't know what the hell it is. And that's why I'm more and more I first of all, I'm a bigger fan of Malcolm X than I am of Martin Luther King, and also a few other all these types of separatist movements that want to take responsibility of their communities. They're pro Second Amendment. They identify the problem in any society usually being exacerbated, if not caused, by government and centralized power itself. How if you have a problem, especially a problem like poverty or segregation or anything like that, that is made worse by more government action, why anybody could be sitting there and standing by statists of this stripe, I just don't understand. You're not talking to people who are intellectually, you know, with it. But
I don't even think they're intellectually honest.
No, they're not.
They have to know.
They're not. That's why they have multiple. That's why these are the types of people who work through front groups, while their true colors are represented by a little bit more of the extreme honest types like Communist Party USA. And then, of course, you have Communist Party USA. We talked about that on Wednesday. And then on the front groups, you have the NAACP. You have the Democrat Party itself. These are people, Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing more racist than Planned Parenthood, but somehow they managed to snag everybody up in this Stockholm syndrome of thinking that it's there for women and minorities when it was there to eliminate the minority population.
Yeah.
You know, so that's it's really unbelievable where there's not very many people that are going to tell the truth, because when you have, you know, W.E. Du Bois, who's pretty much there starting the NAACP with communist backed money, the same people who funded the start of the NAACP were funding the communist revolution in 1917, the same revolution that went and just killed the Romanovs in a basement somewhere with bayonets, women, children, everybody alike. These are the types of people. These are what the kinds of eggs they're willing to break to make this shitty ass omelet. So they can't come out and be honest about who they are.
Well,
they
like you said, I think the most poignant thing you said when we were going over the subsections of the Communist Party was that there's one difference between the Democrats and the Communists. The Communists are honest about who they are.
Yeah.
That was really a telling line. To end the show, I'll just let you guys know, since we're talking about Walkaway a minute ago, the events went on. The LGBT town hall moved venues. That fight's not over yet, by the way. But Brandon just tweeted this past week, Walkaway Harlem town hall, they changed 12 black voter registrations from Democrat to Republican on site. The LGBT town hall, they registered 5 new Republican LGBT voters and 2 changed from Democrats to Republican on site. One person at a time.
Absolutely. One person at a time. And I talk to people about this all the time because, you know, it's sad because I also say, you know, there's always going to be this extremist type of overlap, but you have to be able to get around that and explain it in a more articulate way. Like for somebody to ask a gay person, how on earth can you vote for, you know, Republicans? They're conservative. And of course, conservatives, they have, you know, there's a subset of conservatives who are, you know, moral conservatives. They're very religious and they don't, you know, they're not in line with your lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, you know, you have to be able to identify what we're talking about here. Individual liberty. And how do you make a country or a people strong enough to actually live in a free country? And with that being said, it creates a scenario in which, Tracy, somebody like you or I would actually vote in line with a person like that we would consider despicable, like a David Duke. You know, we would probably vote in the same way as somebody who can be might be racist in some way or whatever. And it's not because we're racist. It's just it creates this weird overlap, and that is focused in on in such a way where it discourages people from actually examining what we're talking about as far as the individual coming up and owning themselves. Because here you have people within the especially the New York gay and lesbian community who might be looking around and saying, why the hell am I being told I can't think for myself and I can't call out what's going wrong just because some of the people who do think for themselves and don't want government in their lives may not look at someone like me as an equal to them. It's just one of those things that's going to be a slow burn. It's very hard to talk about because it's been made into such a sensitive issue.
Yeah, but like when you get these folks to actually come and sit down and the ideas that we're talking about are common sense, free, you know, free. It's freedom. It's liberty. It's liberty. That's it. It's your personal responsibility, your personal freedom from the chains of government that have enslaved men for hundreds of thousands. Goodness.
Think about that. Let's say that you live in New York City and you are gay or lesbian. It doesn't matter what the hell it is. But you live in New York City and that's your home and you are involved in what's going on there. You're involved in local government. You're involved in you're voting on whatever is going on there. And you are taking responsibility for making your home the place that you love to be yours and a place that you want to see continue improve and to realize that form of liberty that we're always striving for. And then on the other hand, you have people who live in New York City who catch word that a isolated town in Montana or Idaho or Colorado has a bakery there that may not want to take part in a wedding for a gay couple. And all of a sudden you have them campaigning to make sure that somebody else's home, which is, you know.
Yeah.
It's so far. It needs to fit to their. Like, what are you talking about? Where are you? This is where you are. You have to be able to allow everybody to work their things out. And if we're able to reach that point of maturity as a nation, I mean, I think that you're going to see the divide between gay, straight, whatever, completely dissipate because
It won't be weaponized. There won't be so much focus on it.
Yeah, there's not that tension there anymore. That's being added on top of the already obvious differences between the way people naturally live their lives. So, yeah, of course, there's people out there that don't like me for any number of external reasons. The KKK wouldn't like me. I'm Italian. They don't like Italians. They don't like Jews. They don't like it. They wouldn't like us just because we're Yankees. So
a lot of people hate us for that.
I know. So there's just that. But then again, I'm just like, to hell with it. I got other things to do. And I think that's the other thing, too, Tracy. And the last thing I'll say is I often ask myself this, and I want to start asking the question more. If all of the social justice issues that these people who have ruined their lives just obsessing over. If all those issues were gone, if all them, all those issues were solved today, what would you dedicate your life toward? What do you want out of your life? Okay, just what would you be doing right now if you didn't have this nonstop ongoing revolution to be fighting? What would that be? And why aren't you
making new victim classes to fight for?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Would you want to be a painter? Would you want to be a poet? Would you want to build buildings? And what do you want to do? These people aren't asking that question. They're just showing up to protests and they're just neglecting themselves and they're neglecting the action that really needs to be taken to make a society stronger. They're just constantly complaining.
Well, we're seeing change, by the way, because the town halls that they had were packed full, hundreds of people. Like, they have pictures and everything. Nobody's making that up. There's pictures and everything. So,
well, that's that.
Hey, listen, good show today, Frank.
Thanks, man.
Frankie, no collusion, Val.
And Tracy Beans.
See? We swapped roles. You guys can listen to the Dark to Light podcast on Apple, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com. Please do me a favor. Share the hell out of this show, should you find it valuable and entertaining. Please make sure to tell your friends to listen to it, because I scream about it all the time, and there are still people who comment underneath saying, I didn't even know you had a podcast. Please, please, if you think it's good, share it with the world.
Yes.
And leave us a good review.
We need good reviews.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it.
That was good. Have a good one, guys.
Night, everybody. Have a great weekend.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
This whole Jesse Smollett bullshit made our country further apart. One ass clown who tried to do an ass clown thing is going to set really black relations decades. I'm being serious about that. You know, they should have put him in jail, okay? As a black man, it would have been better if they would have put Jesse Smollett, stupid ass, in jail. Because now, all the naysayers are going to say, well, what about Jesse Smollett? What about him? When something happens, when somebody wears a MAGA hat and say they beat a black person, that's happened before. I'm going to say it happens a lot, but it's happened before. Right away, what about Jesse Smollett? You know, I got in an argument the other day on the radio, and everything was like, what about OJ? What about Jesse Smollett? Those are two rich black people. That's not what, you know, when Colin Kaepernick knelt for racial injustice, he wasn't kneeling for OJ Simpson and Jesse Smollett. They're rich. He was kneeling for the other people that are getting abused on the street that don't have a voice.
You can find Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.